Jensen spotted the distinctive shape of a leg bone sticking up from the muddy expanse to the side. The bone was covered with fuzzy green mold, but the general shape remained recognizable. What sort of animal it could be from, she didn't know. At least, she hoped it was an animal bone. She was surprised to come upon muddy spots that actually looked as if the mud were boiling. Gooey bubbles of dark brown mud bubbled, as if at a slow boil, throwing gobs of the thick mud and releasing steam. Nothing grew in the sunken areas of bubbling mud. In some places, the mud had hardened into collections of short cones from which rose yellowish vapor. As Jensen carefully picked a path among the tangle of roots between steaming vents and boiling mud, wending her way deeper into the shadows at the bottom, she saw that the muddy stretches began to be replaced by standing water. At first, it was pools and puddles that boiled and hissed and released plumes of acrid vapor. As she left the hot springs behind, the water grew in size to ponds, surrounded by tall reeds reaching up toward clouds of tiny bugs, flitting together in balls. Stagnant water finally took over in earnest, a forest floor that was dark and liquid. Dead trunks stood in the black water, sentinels watching over a land reeking of rot. The whoops and calls of animals carried across the water from places darker still. Duckweed grew in some areas near the edges, under leafy banks, welcoming the unwary, with the look of green ground to tread more easily across. Jensen noticed eyes poked up through the duckweed, watching her pass nearby. The mossy ground became spongy until it too gradually lowered beneath the motionless water. At first, she could see the bottom just inches below the glassy surface, but it went deeper until she could see only darkness below. Through that darkness, she saw shapes, darker yet, glide by. Jensen stepped from root to root, trying to keep her balance without having to put her hands to the often slimy trunks of trees for support. By staying on the protruding curves of roots, she didn't have to step down into water. She feared the water might hide a hole that could swallow her. With each step, as the roots standing above the surface of the water grew farther and farther apart, the knot in the pit of her stomach grew tighter. She hesitated, fearing she was going too far, that she would reach a place where she couldn't turn around. She couldn't really question her judgment that this was the best way in because there had been no opportunity to make a choice. This had been the only way. She leaned down, squinting into the gloom, peering ahead past trailers of moss and leafy vines. Through the mist and shadows and undergrowth, she thought that not far ahead the ground rose up again, offering a drier path. Taking a deep breath of the sultry air, Jensen extended her leg to step across to the next fat root, but she couldn't reach it. She squatted slightly and stretched harder, trying to span the patch of still water, but it was just too far. She straightened to reconsider. She was going to have to jump to the distant, thick bulge of root. It was more of a hop, really, than a jump. She just didn't like what would be under her if she slipped and fell. She also didn't want to have to balance on the lone root out in the expanse of water. If she jumped with enough speed and hit the root just right, she could spring off it to the far bank. She put her fingertips against the smooth but sticky trunk of a tree for support. At least it wasn't slimy, which could make her hand slip at the worst possible moment. She studied the distance. As much of a reach as it was the closest place that offered a firm, dry step. With enough momentum, she could hop to the next root beyond on drier ground. Jensen took a deep breath and then, with a grunt of effort, shoved away from the tree, bounding out over the span of open water. Just as she landed on the curve of tree root, the root moved underfoot. Her weight was committed. She couldn't reverse direction. The root, thicker than her ankle, suddenly writhed beneath her and disappeared. In an instant, a thick coil twisted back around, grasping her calf as another length of cold scales whipped up to seize her around her knee. It was all so fast that part of her was still going for the root that had grabbed her, as another part of her was trying to recoil. Caught between where she'd left and where she was going, she had nothing to help her stay upright. Instinctively, Jensen grabbed for her knife, but as she did, the thing twisted violently, flinging her down face first. She threw her arms out to break her fall. Water frothed under her. She just caught the distant roots at the water's edge, real roots, wet but rough and woody under her clutching fingers. But even as she broke her fall by desperately seizing the roots barely at the limit of her reach, she was welcomed into the embrace of an enormous snake surfacing from beneath her through the churning water. Chapter 21. Jensen strained with all her might, using the roots to try to pull herself free. She cried out as living coils wrenched her around, breaking her grip on the roots, and flipped her onto her back. She frantically reached behind, splashing, groping, trying to snatch for another handhold. She reached, then stretched again, catching hold of thick roots with first one hand and then the other, just in time to prevent herself from being dragged under the water. The head came out of the depths to sling up across her stomach, as if to inspect its stubborn prey. It was the biggest snake Jensen had ever seen. The body, covered in iridescent green scales, shimmered in the weak light as muscles along the powerful trunk flexed. The light intermittently played gleaming stripes along the length of it. Black bands sweeping back across the fierce yellow eyes made it look as if it were wearing a mask. Red tongue flicking, the dark green head glided up between her breasts, coming for her face. Crying out, she shoved the head aside. In response, the muscular body twisted and contracted, grappled with her, drawing her out into the deeper water. Jensen's fingertips held fast to the roots. With all her might, she tried to pull herself out of the water, but the snake was too heavy and too strong. She tried to kick her legs, but the snake had them both now. The coils compressed, tugged, and dragged her in deeper. Coughing up water, Jensen fought panic that clawed at her just as fiercely, just as tenaciously, as if it, too, were a thing alive. She needed her knife, but to get the knife, she would have to let go of the roots. But if she let go, the beast would pull her down under the black water and drown her. One hand, she told herself. That was all she needed. One hand. She could get her knife if she let go with one hand. But as the unrelenting snake undulated, steadily working itself up her body, gripping her now around the middle, her panic locked her fingers all the tighter to the root. As the broad, flat head of the snake emerged from the water and once again began slinking up along her body, Jensen gripped the root as tight as she could in her left hand. With desperate resolve, she let her right hand go and thrust it in under her cloak. Wet cloth bunched as she pushed. She couldn't get under it. The snake's jaw pressed against her chest, as if to let her know that next it was going to compress her lungs so she couldn't breathe. She sucked in her stomach and pushed with her fingers, trying to get them in under the snake. But the heavy body squeezed with paralyzing power against the length of her torso, preventing her from getting her hand in under the cloak to get her knife. As she struggled madly to get through the weapon, wriggling, worming her fingers, the snake suddenly lurched, lifting heavy coils higher, pinning her arm to her body. With her one hand, she still tightly gripped the root behind. The weight of the thing, though, felt as if it would pull her arm from the socket if she didn't let go. She was absolutely certain that letting go would be the worst thing she could do. But the weight was too much. The snake was pulling her so hard that she feared the skin was going to strip from her fingertips. Despite her best effort, she felt her fingers slipping from the root. As tears of pain stung her eyes, she had no choice. She let go of the root. She plunged into the dark depths of deeper water. Her feet at last contacted the bottom. She used her momentum to go where she was pulled, letting her legs bend. And then, with strength powered by terror, she pushed off the submerged roots. As her body flicked around, she seized the roots on the far side. The snake rolled with her, turning her on her back. She cried out as her shoulder twisted. But in all the movement, the splashing, the rolling, the choking on water, there was a brief opening in the snake's grip on her. She didn't waste it. She seized the silver handle. As the broad head, with the thin red tongue flicking, was again coming toward her face, she brought her knife up, wedging the tip of the blade up under the snake's jaw. The snake paused, seeming to recognize the threat that the razor-sharp point represented. Both were still, staring at each other. She felt giddy relief to at last have her knife in hand, even if it was a deadlock. She was on her back, lying in the water with a heavy snake wrapped around her. She wouldn't be able to balance or use her weight to help her. Her arm was weak from the struggle and ached from being twisted. She was exhausted. With all that working against her, it would be no easy matter to dispatch an animal so big and powerful. Even if they were on dry land, such a task would be difficult. The yellow eyes watched her. She wondered if it was a venomous snake. She hadn't yet seen its fangs. If it went for her face, she wondered if she could be quick enough to stop it. "I'm sorry I stepped on you," she said. She didn't actually believe the snake could understand her. She was, in a way, talking to herself, reasoning out loud. "We've both scared each other." The snake remained stone still as it watched her. The tongue remained inside the mouth. Its head, lifted several inches by the tip of the knife, could probably feel the sharp point. Maybe it conceived the threat of the blade as a fang. Jensen didn't know. She just knew that it would be better not to have to battle such a creature. She was in the water, the snake's domain and out of hers. Knife or no knife, the outcome was not certain. Even if she killed it, the weight of the creature, its coils locked around her in a death grip, could still drag her under and drown her. Better to part without a battle, if possible. "Go now," she whispered with deadly seriousness, "or I will have to try to kill you." She lifted the point of the knife to make herself understood in a language she was more confident the snake might possibly understand. Her legs began to throb as she felt the constriction ease. Inch by inch, the head drew back. Scaled coils loosened and slipped away from her body and legs, leaving her to feel suddenly buoyant. Jensen followed the head as it backed away, keeping the point of her knife under the thing's jaws, prepared at the slightest sign of threat to thrust with all her strength. Finally, it slipped back into the water. As soon as she was free of the weight, she scrambled up onto solid ground. She rested on her hands and knees, knife gripped in her fist, gasping for air, getting her breath, letting her frayed nerves settle. She had no idea what the snake thought or why, or if the same thing might work in another time and place, but this day it had, and she whispered a prayer of thanks to the good spirits. If indeed they had anything to do with her deliverance from death's scaly grip, she didn't want to fail to express her gratitude. With the back of her trembling hand, Jensen wiped tears of fright from her cheeks before rising up on shaky legs. She turned and looked out at the still black water lying beneath the overhanging leaves and mosses. In retrospect, she recalled her feet touching submerged roots. Looking back at the expanse of water she had crossed, she could see that perhaps the water had risen a few feet to cover the ground there. Maybe the land had sunk. Either way, if she had just carefully walked through the shallow area rather than tried to jump to the root-turned snake, it might have proven much less troublesome. On the way back, she planned to cut herself a walking stick to help her wade through the low place, to feel ahead, and she would take care not to step on a snake. Still catching her breath, Jensen turned back to the dark way ahead. She had yet to get to the sorceress's place, and she was wasting time standing around feeling sorry for herself. Sebastian needed her help, not for her to feel sorry for herself. She struck out once more, soaked to the skin. Fortunately, though it was winter, it was warm in the swamp. At least she wouldn't freeze. She remembered being wet when she and Sebastian fled her house after the quad murdered her mother. The ground was mere inches above the expanses of stagnant water, but with a profusion of roots woven through it, firm enough to hold her weight. Where the water came over the ground, it was only for short expanses and shallow. Even though the water was only inches deep, Jensen stepped carefully, watching that the roots just below the surface were not lurking snakes. She knew that water snakes were some of the most dangerous. A poison snake, even if it was only a foot long, could kill a person. Like a spider, the size was immaterial if its venom was deadly. She came to another area where steam rose from fissures in the ground. Colored deposits, mostly yellow, crusted around the openings where the vapor rose. The smell gagged her, and she had to seek a way around that would allow her to breathe. The brush was thorny and thick. With her knife, she was able to cut several of the heavier branches and make it through to a shelf of rock against a rock wall. Following the narrow ledge, she skirted a dark pool of water. The surface moved with slow ripples, as something beneath followed her movement. She kept her knife to hand, trying to watch her footing and keep an eye out for anything that might lunge at her out of the water. When she grabbed for a handhold and loose rock came away, almost making her lose her footing, she threw the rock in the water at the thing she couldn't see. It continued to follow her until she reached the far end, where she was able to climb up onto higher ground that took her into dense growth of tall shoots with broad leaves. It reminded her of moving through a field of corn stalks. Off through the stalks, she could see slow movement. She didn't know what it could be, but by the size of it, she didn't want to find out, and picked up the pace. Before long, she was running through the thick growth, dodging stems and ducking under branches. The trees grew in close again, and she was soon back to treading among the tangle of roots. They seemed endless, and progress was agonizingly slow. The day was wearing on. When she came to open areas, or at least open enough, she trotted to save time. She had been in the swamp for hours. It had to be close to the middle of the day. Tom had told her that he thought it might be a day of travel in and back out of the swamp, but she had been at it so long that she began to worry that she might have missed the sorceress's house. After all, there was no telling how wide the swamp was. She could easily have passed it by and never have seen it. She began to worry that that was exactly what had happened. What if she couldn't find the house? What would she do then? She didn't relish the idea of spending the night in the swamp. There was no telling what manner of creature would come out at night. She didn't think there was any chance of making a fire. The thought of being in this place in the dark with no hope of even the light of the moon or stars gripped her with fear. When she emerged at last on the shore of a broad lake, Jensen paused to catch her breath. Trees, fat at the bottom where they emerged from the water, stood like a series of poles supporting a low roof of green. The light was slightly brighter over the lake. To the right side was a wall of rock that provided not so much as a handhold, much less a way to traverse it. It dropped straight down into the water, suggesting how deep that end might be. Scanning the shore to the left, she was startled to see footprints. Jensen ran over and went to one knee to inspect the depressions in the soft ground. By the size of them, they looked to be made by a man, but were not fresh. She followed the prints along the shore and in a few places found fish scales from a catch that had been cleaned on the spot. The growth beyond was thick and tangled, but the grass and dry ground at the edge of the lake provided a good path, and the footprints, hope. At the far side of the still lake, she followed the footprints along a well-worn path through a dense stand of willow and up onto higher ground. When she peered through an open place in the vegetation, she spotted, off through the trees, beyond the tangled growth of brush and the veil of vines, up on a rise ahead, a distant house. Wood smoke curled from a chimney to blend into the gray fog overhead, almost as if the smoke itself were creating the ashen overcast. In the gray gloom of the dark swamp, the light coming from a window at the side of the house shone like a golden jewel, a beacon to welcome the lost, the desperate, the forsaken, and defenseless. The sight of her journey's end after so much terror and loss brought tears of relief. The tears might have been joy, were it not for her dire need. Jensen hurried along the path among the willow and oak, up through the tangled undergrowth, past curtains of vines, and soon reached the house. It was set on a foundation of stone, painstakingly fit without mortar. The walls were made of cedar logs. The roof overhung a narrow porch running around the side, with steps down the back to the path to the nearby lake from where she had come. Taking the steps two at a time up to the narrow porch and following it around the house brought her to a door flanked by pillars of stout logs, supporting a simple but welcoming portico. From the door down wide steps was a broad and well-maintained path out through the swamp in front. That was the way people came when they were invited to visit the sorceress. After the way she had come in, it looked like a road. Wasting no time, Jensen knocked. Impatient, she rapped her knuckles again. Her knocking was interrupted when the door swung inward. An older man stood staring out at her in surprise. Gray hair was taking over from the dark brown and looked to have receded some, but it was still thick. He was neither lean nor stout, and average height. His clothes were not the clothes of a trapper or a man of a swamp, but those of a craftsman. His brown trousers, clean and well kept, were not coarse, but a more expensive, tightly woven fabric. Flecks of gold sparkled from his green shirt. He was the gilder, Friedrich. His discerning face scrutinized her more carefully, taking in the red hair under her hood. "What are you doing here?" he asked. His deep voice fit well with the rest of him, but it was none too friendly. "I came to see Althea, if I may." His eyes turned to the path, then back to her. "How did you get here?" By his suspicious expression after checking, she reasoned that he had some way of knowing if someone had been up the path. Jensen knew of such telltales. She and her mother used them all the time to be sure that no one had sneaked up on them. Jensen gestured off around the house. "I came in the other way, in the back, from beyond the lake." "No one can go beyond the lake, not even me." His brow of wiry black and gray hairs drew down without so much as considering her words or questioning her further. "You're lying." Jensen was stunned. "I'm not. I came the back way. It's urgent that I see your wife, Althea."
"You have not been invited to come here. You must leave. You will not wander off the trail this time if you know what's good for you. Now go away."
"But it's a matter of life and death. I must—"
The door slammed shut in her face. Chapter 22. Jensen stood unmoving with the suddenly closed door inches from her face. She didn't know what to do. At that moment, she was too stunned for any other emotion to yet flood in. From inside, she heard a woman's voice.
"Who is it, Friedrich?"
"You know who it was."
Friedrich's voice was nothing like it had been when he had spoken to Jensen. It was now tender, respectful, familiar.
"Well, let her in."
"But Althea, you can't—"
"Let her in, Friedrich."
Her voice was scolding without being at all harsh. Jensen felt relief wash through her. The knot of arguments burgeoning inside her as she prepared to knock again melted away. The door opened, more slowly this time. Friedrich gazed out at her not as a man defeated or reprimanded, but as a man come to face fate with dignity.
"Please come in, Jensen," he said in a quieter, more kind-hearted voice.
"Thank you,"
Jensen said in a small voice of her own, somewhat astonished and slightly troubled that he knew her name. She took in everything as she followed him into the home. Despite how warm it was in the swamp, the small fire crackling in the stone fireplace gave the air a sweet smell, along with a welcome dry feel. That was the sense of it, more than heat, dryness. The furnishings were simple but well made and embellished with carved designs. The main room had only two small windows on opposite side walls. There were rooms to the back, and in one of them a workbench, lined with orderly tools, sat before another window.
Jensen didn't remember the house, if indeed this was the same place. Her memory of coming to Althea's home was more of an impression of friendly faces than an actual memory of a place. The walls, decorated with things for her eyes to feast upon, seemed familiar. As a child, she would have noticed such visual treats. There were carvings of birds, fish, and animals everywhere, either hanging by themselves or grouped on small shelves. That would be the most captivating to a small child. Some of the carvings were painted, some left plain, but the feathers, scales, and fur had been carved with such fine texture that they looked like animals magically turned to wood. Other carvings were more stylized and beautifully gilded. A mirror on one wall, down low, was framed with a starburst, each ray alternately gilded gold and silver. Toward the fireplace, a large red and gold pillow sat on the floor. Jensen's eye was drawn to a square board with a gilded grace upon it, sitting on the floor before the pillow. It was just like the grace she often drew, but this one, she knew, was real. Small stones rested in a pile to the side. In a beautifully made chair, with a high back and carved arms, sat a slight woman with big, dark eyes, made all the more striking by golden hair flecked through with gray. The fall of hair surrounded her face and swept down to lie about her shoulders. Her wrists rested over the arms of the chair while her long, slender fingers gracefully traced the curve of the spiral carved in the end. "I am Althea." Her voice was gentle but carried a clear ring of authority. She didn't get up. Jensen curtsied. "Mistress, please forgive my bursting in uninvited and unexpected like this."
"Perhaps uninvited, but not unexpected, Jensen."
"You know my name?" Jensen realized too late how foolish the question sounded. The woman was a sorceress. There was no telling what her powers could discern. Althea smiled, and a pleasant look it was on her.
"I remember you. One does not forget meeting one like you."
Jensen wasn't sure what that meant, but said thank you anyway. The smile on Althea's face widened, crinkling her eyes.
"My, but you look just like your mother. Were it not for the red hair, I would think I had flown back in time, to when I saw her last, when she was just the age you are now."
She held a hand out level before her. "And you were only this big." Jensen felt her face going as red as her hair. Her mother had been beautiful, not just wise and loving. Jensen didn't believe she could compare to such an attractive woman, or ever live up to the kind of example her mother set.
"How is she?"
Jensen swallowed.
My mother is gone."
In anguish, Jensen's gaze sank to the floor.
"She was murdered."
"I'm so sorry," said Friedrich, standing behind her. He put a hand to her shoulder in sympathy. "I truly am. I knew her some from the palace. She was a good woman."
"How did it happen?" Althea asked.
"They finally caught up with us."
"Caught up with you?"
Althea's brow twitched. "Who?"
"Why, the Daharan soldiers, Lord Rawl's men."
Jensen drew her cloak back, showing them both the handle of the knife.
"This came from one of them."
Althea's gaze took in the knife, then returned to Jensen's face.
"I'm so sorry, dear."
Jensen nodded. "But I have to warn you. I went to see your sister, Lathea."
"Did you see her before she died?"
Jensen stared in surprise.
"Yes, I did."
Althea shook her head with a sad smile.
"Poor Lathea. How was she? I mean, did she have a good life?"
"I don't know. She had a nice house, but I only saw her briefly. I got the impression she lived alone. I went to her because I needed help. I recalled my mother mentioning the name of a sorceress who had helped us, but I guess I got the names wrong. I ended up at your sister's. She didn't even want to talk to me. She said she could do nothing, that it had been you who had helped me before. That's why I had to come here."
"How did you get in?" Friedrich asked, as he gestured to the path out front. "You must have wandered off the path."
"Not that way. I came from the back way."
Now, even Althea frowned.
"There is no back way."
"Well, there was no path as such, but I made my way through.
No one can come in from that side, Althea insisted. There are things back there that ward that side.
I know. I had a run-in with a huge snake.
You saw the snake?
Friedrich asked. Jensen nodded. I stepped on it accidentally. I thought it was a root. We had a time of it, and I had a swim.
They were both peering at her in a way that made Jensen nervous.
Yes, yes, Althea said, sounding unconcerned about the snake, waving a hand as if to brush away such petty news. But surely you had to see the other things.
Jensen looked from Friedrich's wide eyes to Althea's frown.
I never saw anything but the snake.
The snake is just a snake, Althea said, dismissing the fearsome beast with another impatient wave of her hand. There are dangerous things back there, things that would let no one through, no one. How in the name of creation were you able to get past them?
What sort of things?
Things of magic, Althea said in a grim tone. I'm sorry, but all I can tell you is that I got through, and I never saw anything but the snake.
She frowned toward the ceiling as she thought again, although I did see things in the water, dark things under the water.
Fish, Friedrich scoffed.
And in the bushes. I saw things in the bushes. Well, I didn't see them exactly, but I saw the bushes move, and I knew something was in there. They remained hidden, though.
These things, Althea said, do not hide in bushes. They fear nothing. They hide from nothing. They would have come out and torn you apart.
I don't know why they didn't, Jensen said.
Her gaze darted out through the window at the side to the stagnant expanses of murky water beneath a shadowy tangle of vines, feeling a pang of worry about her return journey. With Sebastian's life at stake, she felt frustration at the sorceress's pointless talk about what was in the swamp. After all, she had made it through, so it wasn't as impossible as the two of them wished her to believe.
Why do you live out here anyway? I mean, if you're so wise and all, then why do you live out here in a swamp with snakes?
Althea lifted an eyebrow. I prefer my snakes without arms and legs.
Jensen took a breath and started again.
Althea, I came because I'm in desperate need of your help.
Althea shook her head as if she didn't want to hear it. I can't help you. Jensen was stunned to have her request dismissed so out of hand.
But you must.
Really?
Please, you helped me before. I need that help again. Lord Rawl is getting closer all the time. I've only just escaped with my life on more than one occasion. I'm at my wit's end, and I don't know what else to do. I don't even really know why my father wanted to kill me in the first place.
Because you are an ungifted offspring.
There. You've just spoken the very reason why it makes no sense. I'm ungifted. So what possible threat could I represent? If he was a powerful wizard, what harm could I cause him? What threat could I possibly represent? Why did he want so badly to kill me?
The Lord Rawl destroys any offspring he discovers who are not gifted.
But why?
That he does is the result, not a reason. There must be a reason. If I at least knew that much of it, I might be able to figure out how to do something about it.
She shook her head again. I don't know. It isn't like the Lord Rawl came to discuss his business with me.
After I saw your sister and she wouldn't help me, I went back to ask her about that very thing, but she had been murdered by the same men who are after me. They must have feared she could tell me something. So they murdered her.
Jensen smoothed her hair back over her head. I'm sorry about your sister, I really am. But don't you see? You're in danger too, for what you know about it. I can't imagine why they would harm her.
Frowning, Althea stared off as she considered.
What you're saying, that she might know something, makes no sense. She was never involved in any of it. Lathea knew less than I. She wouldn't have known anything of why Dark and Rawl would have wanted to rid the world of you. She could have told you nothing.
Well, even if he thought those of us born without the gift were inferior and just plain worthless, if he wanted to exterminate the runts of the litter, so to speak, why would his son, my half-brother, want just as badly to kill me? I couldn't harm my father, and I can't harm his son, yet Richard, too, sends quads to hunt me. Althea still didn't look convinced. Are you sure they are the Lord Rawl's men doing this? I just don't see it in the stones. They came into my house. They killed my mother. I saw them. I fought them. They were Daharan soldiers. She drew the knife from its sheath at her belt and held the handle up for the woman to see. One was wearing this. Althea's gaze took it in with care, the way one would look upon anything deadly, but she said nothing. Why would Lord Rawl kill my mother? Why does the House of Rawl want me dead? I don't know the answer. Althea lifted her hands and let them fall back to her lap. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. Jensen went to her knees before the woman. Althea, please, even if you don't know why, I still need your help. Your sister wouldn't help me. She said only you could. She said that only you can see the holes in the world. I don't know what that means, but I know it has something to do with all this, with magic. Please, I need help. The sorceress appeared puzzled. And what is it you wish me to do? Hide me, like you did when I was little. Cast a spell over me so that they won't know who I am or where to find me, so they can't follow me. I just want to be left alone. I need the spell that will hide me from Lord Rawl. But it's not just for me. I need it to help a friend, too. I need the spell to hide my true identity so that I can go back into the people's palace and get him out. Get him out? What do you mean? Who is this friend? His name is Sebastian. He helped me when the men attacked and murdered my mother. He saved my life. He brought me here to see you. Your sister said we should ask at the palace where we could find you. He traveled all that way with me, helped me get here so that I could come see you and get the help I need. We went to the palace to find Friedrich, so I could know where you lived, and while we were there, guards took Sebastian prisoner. Don't you see? He helped me, and because of that, they have him. They will surely torture him. He was helping me. It's my fault he's in this trouble. Please, Althea, I need your help to get him out. I need a spell to hide me so I can go back in and rescue him. Incredulous, Althea stared. Why do you think a spell could accomplish this? I don't know. I don't know anything about how magic works. I know that I need its help, that I need a spell to hide my true identity. The woman shook her head, as if she were dealing with a complete lunatic. Jensen, what you are envisioning is not how magic works. Do you think I can cast a web, and you will then be able to walk into the palace, and guards will somehow fall under this spell and start unlocking doors for you? Well, I don't know. Of course you don't. That is why I'm telling you that it doesn't work that way. Magic is not a key that opens doors for you. Magic is not something that, poof, spontaneously solves problems. Magic would only compound the problems. If you have a bear in your tent, you don't invite another in. Two bears will not be better than one. But Sebastian needs my help. I need the help of magic in order to get him that help. Were you to go in there, as you think, and use some kind of... She waved a hand around as if trying to think of a word to describe it. I don't know, magic dust or something to open prison doors to get your friend out. What do you suppose would happen? That you two could then go off happily, and that would be the end of it? Well, I don't know, exactly. Althea leaned forward on an elbow. Don't you suppose that the people who run the palace would want to know how this happened, so they could prevent it from happening again? Don't you suppose that some perfectly innocent people whose job it is to guard doors there would be in a great deal of trouble for allowing a prisoner to escape, and that they might suffer because of it? Don't you suppose that the palace officials would want their escaped prisoner back? Don't you suppose, since such measures were used to get him out, that whatever threat they feared this friend of yours might represent, after such an escape they would think that he must be even more dangerous than they originally believed? Don't you suppose that some perfectly innocent people might be hurt during the extreme measures taken to apprehend such an escaped prisoner? Don't you suppose they would send out an army and the gifted to comb the countryside before he could get far? Don't you even suppose, the sorceress finally said in the gravest of tones, that a wizard as powerful as the Lord Rawl of all Dahara
might have some decidedly nasty and painfully protracted fatal surprise in store for anyone daring to use a pitiful old sorceress's spell against him, and within his very own palace walls on top of it? Jensen stared at the dark eyes fixed on her.
I never thought of all that.
You are telling me something I already know.
But how can I get Sebastian back? How can I help him?
I would suppose you must figure a way to get him out, if he can be gotten out in the first place. But it must be done in a way that takes all that I have said and more into account. Breaking a hole in the wall for him to step through to freedom would bring out the hounds, now wouldn't it? It would bring you trouble, much like magic would. You must instead think of a way that convinces them to turn him out on their own. Then they won't be chasing you to have him back. That all made sense to her.
How can I accomplish such a thing?
The sorceress shrugged. If it can be done, I would wager that you can do it. After all, you have so far lived to grow into a fine young woman, escaped quads, found me, and got yourself in here now, didn't you? You've accomplished much. You must only set your mind to it, but you don't start out by picking up a stick and whacking a hornet's nest.
But I can't see how I can do it without the help of magic. I'm a nobody.
A nobody. Althea scoffed as she leaned back. She was becoming a teacher, impatient with a student doing poorly on a lesson. You are somebody. You are Jensen, a smart girl with a brain. You should not kneel before me and plead ignorance, telling me what you cannot do while asking instead for others to do it for you. If you want to be a slave in life, then continue going around asking for others to do for you. They will oblige, but you will find the price is your choices, your freedom, your life itself. They will do for you, and as a result, you will be in bondage to them forever, having given your identity away for a paltry price. Then, and only then, you will be a nobody, a slave, because you yourself and nobody else made it so.
But maybe in this case it's different.
The sun rises in the east. There are no special exceptions, just because you wish it. I know of what I speak, and I am telling you magic is not the answer. What do you think? If you had a spell that they didn't know you were Darkenrall's daughter, then they would fall over themselves to open doors for you? They will open the door of your friend's cell for no one unless they think it should be opened. It would make no difference if there were a spell to turn you into a six-legged rabbit. They would still not open the doors you want open just because you were now a six-legged rabbit by the hand of magic. But magic is a tool, not a solution. Jensen reminded herself to remain composed, even though she wanted to seize the woman by the shoulders and shake her until she agreed to help. Unlike with Lethea, she did not intend to lose this chance for that help.
What do you mean magic is not a solution? Magic is powerful.
You have a knife. You showed it to me.
That's right.
And when you are hungry, do you wave your knife in someone's face and demand their bread?
No.
You entice them to give you bread by giving them a coin in exchange.
You mean you think they can be bribed?
Another sigh.
No.
Of all I know, I can tell you they cannot be bribed, at least not in the conventional sense. However, the principle is not entirely without some parallel. When Friedrich wishes bread, he doesn't use his knife to take the bread from those who have it, at least not in the sense of how you wish to use magic. He uses his knife as a tool to carve figures, and then he gilds them. He sells what he made with his knife, and then exchanges that coin for the bread. You see, if he were to use the knife, the tool, to directly solve the problem of getting bread, it would do him more harm in the end. He would be a thief and hunted as such. He uses his head instead and uses the knife as a tool to create something with the aid of his mind, thus solving the problem of obtaining bread with his knife.
You mean, then, that I need to use magic indirectly? I must somehow use magic as a tool to help me?
Althea sighed heavily.
No, child, forget magic. You must use your head. Magic is trouble. Use your head.
I did, Jensen said. It wasn't easy, but I used my head to come to you to get help. It's a spell I need now as a tool to help me, to hide me. In that way, it will be a tool as you suggest.
Althea looked away into the hearth, watching the wavering flames.
I cannot help you in that way.
I don't think you understand. I'm hunted by powerful men. I just need a spell to hide my identity, like you did when I was little, when I lived at the palace with my mother.
Still, the old woman stared off into the hearth.
I cannot do that. I don't have the power.
But you do. You've already done it once.
A lifetime of frustration, fear, loss, and futility surfaced, bringing with it bitter tears.
I didn't travel all this way, suffer all this hardship to have you tell me no. Lathea told me no, told me that only you can see the holes in the world and that only you could help me. I must have your help, your spell to hide me. Please, Althea, I'm begging for my life.
Althea would not look her in the eyes. I cannot cast a spell like that for you. Jensen choked back the tears.
Please, Althea, I just want to be left alone. You have the power.
I do not have what you've invented in your mind for me. I have helped you in the only way I can.
How can you sit here knowing that other people are suffering and dying and not help? How can you be so selfish, Althea? How can you not help when I need it?
Friedrich put a hand under Jensen's arm, lifting her to her feet. I'm sorry, but you've asked what you would. You've heard what Althea has to say. If you are wise, you will use what you have learned to help yourself. Now it's time for you to leave.
Jensen pulled away.
All I want is the help of a spell. How can she be so selfish?
Friedrich's eyes blazed with fury, even if his voice did not. You have no right to speak to us in that manner. You don't know anything about it, about the sacrifices she's made. It's time for you to...
Friedrich?
Althea said in a soft voice.
Why don't you make us some tea?
Althea, there is no reason you should have to explain any of it, least of all to her. Althea smiled up at him.
It's all right.
Explain what?
Jensen asked.
My husband may sound harsh to you, but it's because he doesn't want me to burden you. He knows that some people leave here unhappy with the knowledge I give them.
Her dark eyes turned up to her husband.
Make us some tea?
Friedrich's face twisted with a long-suffering expression before he nodded in resignation.
What do you mean?
Jensen asked.
What knowledge? What is it you aren't telling me?
As Friedrich went to a cupboard and retrieved a kettle and cups, setting the cups on the table, Althea gestured for Jensen to sit on the pillow before her. Chapter 23 Jensen made herself comfortable on the red and gold pillow on the floor in front of the sorceress.
Many years ago, Althea began, clasping her hands in her lap atop her black and white print dress, more than you might believe, I traveled with my sister to the old world, beyond the Great Barrier to the south.
Jensen decided that, for the time being, it might be best just to keep quiet and learn what she could, rather than bring up what she already knew, that the new Lord Rawl, bent on conquest, had destroyed the Great Barrier to the south in order to invade the old world, and that Sebastian had come up from the old world to try to find a way to help the Emperor, Jagang the Just, stop the invading Daharans. She thought that maybe if she understood it all a little better herself, then she might be able to come up with a way of convincing Althea to help her.
I went to the old world to go to a place called the Palace of the Prophets, Althea said. This, too, Jensen had heard of from Sebastian. I have a gift for a very primitive form of prophecy. I wanted to learn what I could about it, while my sister wished to learn about cures and such. I also wanted to learn things about people like you.